This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On the UAE's number one talk radio station, Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer. Great to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. And it is all about home and away today. Let's start with the home. Some of the hidden hazards that might be within your walls and outside as well. We were speaking to an energy and space expert looking at electromagnetic fields, air quality and more. Where should you be charging your phone? And what impact can those hidden hazards have on your health? Discussing sustainability in spas, we love a pamper. Is it possible to have one guilt-free? Speaking to the CEO of the grooming company to see what's been happening behind the scenes in their 50 salons across the UAE. Talking travel with Emily Jenkins of Donata Travel. She had an amazing deal for around 2,000 dirhams to go to Crete this Eid, and taking your travel questions too. And it was a feline special on pets and vets. The cat vet was on hand as we talked kittens, cats, spaying and more.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Discussing this afternoon with Valentina Treda, the founder and interim architect at Energy and Space, about some of the hidden health hazards around our homes, things that might be seemingly innocuous that perhaps we should be a little bit more tuned into than we might realise. Valentina, thank you for being with us. Now, we are going to be live on Facebook in just a few minutes, but I'm curious, you've got a bit of kit in front of you. What's the gadget you've brought into the studio?
So here we have all the electromagnetic fields meter, because at the end we will measure the EMF in your studio.
Now, given that I'm surrounded by three screens, five keyboards and more buttons than I can count, I'm a little bit concerned about this. So do stay with us to see what's happening in here. Can you tell us a little bit about Energy and Space and what you do, what problems you're looking to address?
So at Energy and Space, we improve people's health by enhancing the health of their environment, whether it's a home or an office space, any space where people spend most of their time. We also offer architectural interior design services. We create absolutely non-toxic, healthy spaces for people to thrive, to feel good mentally and physically and spiritually as well.
Because presumably, we've probably been in spaces that you've had some involvement in, or they follow similar philosophies and science as well, without even realizing. And it's really interesting. Sometimes you go into a home or you go into a space and you feel good, but you can't necessarily pinpoint why. So we're going to be unpicking some of that. And as I said, some of the things we should be aware of in our own homes, things we can perhaps control. Can we start with air quality, Valentina? Because I saw a study just today that was looking at UK classrooms and it said 6 in 10 classrooms have worse air quality than busy roads. Why is sometimes indoor air quality worse than what's happening outside? It seems counterintuitive.
Yes, that's one of the biggest problems and issues in today's world in our homes. And that happens because there are so many toxins that comes with our furniture, with our built materials, all the materials of construction that we have in our houses, with the electromagnetic fields as well, which is a very important part. And there is a lot of issues when it comes to mold and moisture levels, especially we live in Dubai. So we have humidity, which is, you know, it's our climate here. So what happens in our homes, there is a lot of condensation that gets formed and that creates mold. And this mold emits spores, mycotoxins that make the air quality of our house absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. Plus, with all the AC ducts, we bring in 50% of the outdoor air inside. So when you sum that up with all the indoor toxins, it becomes really, really challenging to have healthy environments. And 65% of our buildings are polluted, and that is worldwide.
Is there anything that we can do as individuals? And I'm thinking about, you know, people like me rather than people like you who are in the industry and have access to, you know, equipment and materials that we can be doing to offset things at home a little bit and make some improvements?
Yes, there is a lot that can be done to improve the indoor air quality in specific. What many people do, they clean the AC ducts of the house every year, hopefully every year. But what people don't know is that not only the sea ducts needs to be cleaned, but also the false ceilings, which are the empty spaces where the ducts are sitting in our houses. Because of the dusty weather in Dubai and the humidity, these ceilings collect a lot of dust, which then with the moisture and condensation becomes mold. And all of this, it's sprayed into our houses through the AC. So this is one of the biggest things that absolutely is a must in Dubai, to clean the false ceilings and start looking at ingredients of what you bring inside your house. In the same way people look at their food and, you know, at the supermarket, you want to see all the labels. But indoor air quality, you know, we absorb toxicity and toxins through skin and by breathing. Mm-hmm. And ingestion as well. So 2/3 of our absorption of toxins actually comes from the indoor air quality and the environment we live in. So I think it's important that we create more awareness so that people understand, start reading ingredients. And there's a lot of toxins such as VOCs, formaldehyde, fire retardants, and many more that we can avoid.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
And we are talking homes today. Valentina Tireda is with us from Energy and Space, where she's the founder and integrative architect as well. And we're talking about some of the hidden hazards in our homes, from air quality to electromagnetic fields. And Valentina in the studio has, well, you explain to me, it's like a reader of what's happening without us even realizing. Can you explain a little bit more about electromagnetic fields and what that's detecting?
Electromagnetic fields are frequencies emitted by devices, phone towers, wireless connections, Bluetooth, any technology in our homes, really, that we cannot see, we cannot smell, we cannot touch, and we cannot hear. So now we will make you hear them, so you will understand that they actually exist and they affect our health. The EMF are divided into electric fields, which is what comes from computer screens, side lamps in our bedrooms, and basically all appliances that are running on AC current. And then we have magnetic fields, which is another EMF, which always comes together with the electric fields. And we have the radio frequencies or microwave radiations, which are emitted by phone towers outside our houses, Wi-Fi routers, baby monitors, Bluetooth devices, speakers,
everything in our
iPads,
lives.
iPhone, everything that since I would say 5 to 10 years ago, we started using regularly. Because this has just happened really a few years ago, mm-hmm. before our lives were very different. So this impacts our health.
So when you say impacts our health, are we talking physical and mental, and in what ways? What might be some of the symptoms or manifestations, Valentina?
So there is a lot of research and scientific papers done by doctors and electromagnetic radiation specialists. And what they found, for example, is that when you are around a high EMF environment, your blood actually clots. So we all know that it leads to strokes and many other issues. Other studies have shown that there is a higher cancer rates in areas where people live 400 meters from phone towers, or less than 400 meters. And what these electromagnetic fields do, they affect our cells by damaging the membranes of our cells. And once the membrane is damaged or breaks, there is a formation of free radicals. Free radicals can lead to headaches, to flu symptoms, fatigue, insomnia. There's many symptoms. Most of my clients, that they're sensitive, they start noticing when they hear a vibration when they go to sleep. So where everything is very quiet, they hear some vibrations in their ears or through their body, or if they hold the phone, they feel like a tingle or something there. So this is what is,
But it's
common.
So hard though, because as I said, these are things that are in our lives and are necessary, you know, for many of us, for working and living and socializing and monitoring our babies, I guess, and for some people. And, you know, we don't want to be wallpapering our walls in tinfoil or wearing, you know, special hats. So what are some things we can do to offset some of these potential dangers?
Yeah, so as you said, it's impossible to be avoided, especially when you are outside your house. So there is really no need to panic about that, because the most important thing is that you keep your bedrooms as clean, as healthy as possible, because that's where when your body needs to recover, well, cells are regenerating. And so it's very important in the bedrooms and also in your overall home, because that's the only space we can really protect and decide how we want to, how we want it to be. So key things for the bedroom. What can be done is definitely do not keep your phones on your bedside tables. Even if you put them on airplane mode or off, you must not charge them on the bedside table, because the charger of the phone emits electric fields very high. So you're sleeping like in electric air, literally. If you have bedside lamps, make sure that you either unplug them, or here in Dubai, we can just switch off the power switch. That's important, because even if they're off, they're still emitting electric fields, because the current flows in and there is like a battery inside that is storing this electricity. When it comes to, you know, iPads, baby monitors, it's very important for parents to understand that baby monitors emit radio frequencies exactly like a Wi-Fi router does. So Wi-Fi routers, speakers on Bluetooth, any appliances, even air purifiers today, they have Bluetooth and wireless connection. So if you have an air purifier in your bedroom or a dehumidifier, and you can actually control the air quality on your phone, it means that that machine is emitting high radio frequencies. And you can actually deactivate that in some of these devices, or you can just choose one that it's not connected. So there are always ways around using technology in a safer way.
What's your own home like, Valentina?
Well, my home is very minimal, I would say. Just recently, I managed to convince my husband to remove the phone and to, you know, you always need to find the balance with family and sharing the space with other people. So I think we have a good setup now, where our bedroom and my daughter's bedroom as well is, there is no baby monitors, no EMF, nothing is there. So very healthy, but also we really watch what we bring into our homes in terms of furniture and new things. So if you come to our house, it's super minimal. There is the bare minimum there, because we don't want to add on more things coming in.
So if you could wave a magic wand then, if you could build your dream home, where would it be? What would it look like, and what would be in it, or indeed not in it?
Well, I think it would be definitely in you know, in a very green forest type of environment, ideally in front of a lake, and you know, nearby a city, because we enjoy our life with people. We don't want to be too isolated, but it would be built 100% naturally. So with you know, straw, clay, depending where you are, depending on materials available there. So there is absolutely no synthetic artificial materials inside, everything wired, no EMF, just natural frequencies.
We've got lots of questions to get through, Valentina, before we come to our reading in the studio. Jonathan's saying, surely if all these electric fields were so bad, hotels, for example, wouldn't have the power supplies on bedside tables. I mean, I guess it's the choice of convenience.
Yes. So because, see, smart homes and technology and these integrated lightings, they are, you know, people love them. It's part of design. So I'm an architect, so we do healthy, non-toxic spaces. And when we work for bedrooms, hotels, we inform our clients and we give a beautiful design without having all of these electric fields, you know, blasting in the room while people sleep. It's possible.
I want to come and find out what our reading is in the studio. Yes. So we're going to put up this machine next to your microphone so we can get a bit of an idea. So tell us what we're listening for.
So first, we're going to start using the EMF meters that measures radio frequencies. So your wireless connections, phone towers coming from outside. So I'll turn it on now.
Turn it on.
So as you can hear, the sound is not very pleasant because we have signals from outdoor phone towers and, of course, all the Wi-Fi connection here.
There's a lot going on in here.
But it's not really as bad. Ideally, in an ideal environment, you should have 100 microwatts per square meters. That's how you measure it. Here you have about 1,000. So you're not really as high.
What's the worst you've ever seen or witnessed?
The worst was in a family home, about 40,000 microwatts, which is basically as much as a phone tower is emitting outside.
What did they have in their house?
A phone tower very close by.
Really?
Yeah, with a lot of antennas from both Du and Etisalat. So it was blasting all the frequencies there. So, but imagine if we could hear this sound all day, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty horrendous.
We would go crazy. Luckily, we can't hear it, but it's good to be aware that these frequencies are there.
So if I was to put my phone closer to your... Have you got your phone there?
Yes.
Let's have a little listen.
I would like to show people what happens. So now I'm going to do the same measuring, but measuring against my phone, because I think it's really important to create awareness about the use of iPads, baby monitors for kids, because kids are, you know, their immune system is not developed yet at a young age. They absorb a lot of radio frequencies through their brains because their brains have much more water than we have as adults. So I will show you now the, I will just measure my phone and you can hear. Oh. So we are now at 350,000 microwatts per square meters.
I'm in so much trouble.
So
I don't want to think
difference.
About how many hours I spend on my phone. Valentina, if you could ask everyone today to change something, do something, bring something into their home or take it out of their home in order to improve their health in this respect, what would you like to see?
So I would say three main things. One is definitely in your bedroom, there should not be any electrical device, no appliances. If there is air purifier, which is important to have, it shouldn't have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi connection. There shouldn't be even a TV screen because these are emitting even when they're off. Second thing, definitely no baby monitors nearby the beds of the kids and no iPads connected on Wi-Fi or 4G for children. That's super important. And third is to really clean your false ceilings from the dust. These things will really make an improvement immediately for people to sleep better and feel better.
I think any promise of more sleep is always going to be listened to. Valentina, thank you so, so much. For anyone who wants to find out more about what you do at Energy and Space, what's the best way of finding out?
So we have our website, energyandspace.org, and Instagram, energy.and.space.
Valentina, thank you so much. Really interesting to hear what you've been working on. And I have to say, the last week I have been charging my phone in the kitchen and I've noticed an incredible difference in my sleep. And I'm honestly not just saying that because you're in the studio and this is obviously something you're passionate about. It has been remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, I am also on a lot of painkillers after having my wisdom teeth out, but there could be a crossover in this coincidence. Thank you so much, Valentina.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're a little bit spoiled here in the UAE when it comes to pampering. This is not a complaint, by the way. I think I'd in fact never had a manicure before I moved to Dubai. But there are some things that perhaps need to be addressed in the industry. And so much so that, well, the market size of the spa industry in the UAE is estimated over $700 million. And a lot of this comes down to the hotel and resort spa sector as well. But how sustainable are these spas? To show their commitment to sustainability goals of the UAE, some of Dubai's most popular beauty brands and salons, so Enbar, 1847, and Sisters Beauty Lounge, are becoming the first in the industry to put a real focus on addressing some of these issues, from reducing plastic, water and paper across the operations, and putting a bit of emphasis as well on educating staff, sourcing suppliers. And to find out more, joined now by the CEO of the grooming company, Vincenzo Minoi, is with us. Vincenzo, thank you so much for being with us. I should say you are very well groomed and turned out this afternoon. I would expect nothing less. Thank you for joining us. I guess I really just want to start by asking why. We know this is tying in very much with the UAE's sustainability goals, but why do you feel like this is something that you as the spa industry can really be addressing?
So, as you know, in the spa industry, we have a lot of clients coming through our doors. So it's really us a way where we can influence, educate consumer. And when I joined the UAE 4 years ago, I was reading about the goals of the UAE to become a global hub, to be successful as a successful model in the green economy. And one of the points, it's the fifth point they raised, it was about rationalizing the use of water resources. It was about electricity. It was about natural resources and recycling waste. Mm. So I was thinking, how can we contribute this, to this project of the nation and bring our small step into this field?
Because I guess it's a real balance, isn't it? Because, you know, you want to be commercially successful. You want to have practices that are efficient for both, you know, those who are working there and getting people through the doors and, you know, that kind of customer experience. But with that sense of responsibility on your shoulders as well. So can we think about an average spa, you know, when we think about what is being consumed, you know, heat and water, energy, and what are you able to do to actually reduce that in a practical and measurable way?
Yeah, a few months ago, I don't know if you read that in the UAE, we consume, every resident consumes 550 litres of water per day versus an international average of 300.
There's a lot of grass being watered around the UAE. There's a lot of golf courses that are looking very verdant at the moment as well.
But a part of that, an average salon consumes about 60,000 litres per day. So we're looking, how can we contribute in this, if you want, waste of water? Because water is becoming, is kind of the new oil in the future, right? Mm-hmm. So what we have applied in all our 50 salons is some water savings. We changed all the water heads of in the basins. So we have water heads that reduced by 65% the usage of water. And we also, in all the treatment rooms, we changed. We have a new Swiss technology, this is called Yosa, that reduced the water consumption by 65%. So, and on the top is also education, right? For instance, do you know that if you take a shower versus doing a bath, you reduce by 50% the water, right? And this is for a shower of 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you heard in the past, there is this 3 minutes shower. So you can do, I tried it for a month. You can, and now my habit is becoming to have a reduce showers, and you can do it in 3-4 minutes.
So that's where I do my best thinking, though.
Yeah, so it's at the end is like having some measure in place, but also educating
and
our staff,
training right? staff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also presumably not compromising on that customer experience.
Of course not, and I would say sometimes some of this measure is a better customer experience. Sometimes it's also a financial savings. And on the top, you do something that goes in the right direction because you have a business that is more sustainable. I give you an example, for instance, why you would print every time a receipt when you can receive by email. Mm-hmm. And you will have the same, even a better journey, even a better kind of experience because it's digital, you keep it in your emails and you don't lose it and so on and so on.
Question here from Rachel saying, what about plastics? Good question.
Yeah, plastic in the industry is a huge kind of headaches, right?
Well, and also presumably as a spa, you know, you're thinking about being sanitary, being safe, especially during COVID times, yeah. And that often means disposable things.
Yes, but disposable, I will tell you about disposable later, but plastic, I just did a calculation for last year, how much plastic we used in the salon. So we have 50 salons across 5 brands. And we use like a shampoo bottle or stuff like that, right? We use 2.5 tons wow. of plastic only in our salons. So we have now put a system that we recycle. So every time we have a delivery, because we do our own deliveries, we also take the plastic out and we give it to our center. And plastic can be reused. And today, the recycling percentage of plastic is under 10%, but there is much more we can do. Mm-hmm. And everybody can contribute, right, in recycling at home. And the first contribution is that we want to recycle all the plastic we use in the salons. And we are going also to try in the future to give the opportunity to our customer to bring plastic back to our
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What about us as customers and consumers? What behaviours could we be changing to, I guess, help in this mission?
But the first one is already easy, right? It's like about water. Take showers, not of bath. don't take 10 minutes, but take 3 minutes. Change your water heads with something that reduces the water consumption. It's quite easy.
What about when we come into, because I'm often... Not often. It has been known that I've worn the wrong shoes for a pedicure, and then you get your little kind of disposable shoes or your little separators.
Yeah.
Being a bit better prepared, so you're not having to put those out in the first place.
So there is always a trade-off between, we are known in the industry to be salons that are very super hygienic. So we all in 1847 Sisters and Bar, Jet Set and Trevor Sorby, each time after every single usage, we cannot sanitize at sanitation grade all utensils, and we use disposables. So disposables is kind of an issue, but on the other side is also very hygienic. And disposable is not always an issue. For instance, if you take towels, mm-hmm. to produce a towel, you need cotton. To produce 1 kilo of cotton, you need 5,500 liters of water.
And then you're thinking about washing the towels as well.
And then I'm thinking of washing the towels. So we move to disposable towels. It's disposable, it's biodegradable, it's done with pulp of paper that comes from a sustainable forest, and it's super hygienic because once you use it once, you dispose it. So it's kind of a trade-off to find and to be close to our values. So mm-hmm. we provide great services, but also in a very hygienic matter. And also have a trade-off on what we can do in having a more sustainable business. It's not that easy, right? I tell you already, it's not easy.
Of course not. But I think it's really admirable that, first of all, you even know how many tons of plastic you were getting through in that time. And and that's a decision to tune into that. It's a decision to engage and
exactly.
make a change.
So exactly. And you can measure it, right? Because I hope that in the next 12 months, we can say we did it. Another thing that we are doing, you know, we are moving all our coffee machine to beans only. So it's not anymore dosage. Mm-hmm. We use a dosage of plastic to do coffee. We use 150 kilos per year. So it's kind of an easy one. You can offer a better coffee. It smells coffee. And you don't have to dispose the plastic of the coffee.
Well, thank you for raising this and hopefully giving some ideas to both us as people who like to be pampered, but other people in the industry as well, that people can do better. Vincenzo, thank you so, so much. Vincenzo joining us there from the Gruden Company, as he said, got Sisters Beauty Lounge, 1847 and N Bar as well.
Home or away?
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Well, that's a big question. Home or away, what are your summer plans? Have you made any bookings for Eid? I would love to hear where you're going, what you're doing. Eid is coming up. Emily Jenkins joining us from Donata Travel live in the studio this hour. Now, what is trending? Where are people booking at the minute? Because I've heard that the overall bookings at Donata are up by 200%.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. There's an appetite for travel.
Yeah. So my answer to that question around what's trending this summer, I would say very much travel is trending this summer.
Let's go somewhere, anywhere. I'd say it seems to be everyone needs something to look forward to at the minute. I don't know what that kind of energy is that, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm going to get something in the diary. I'm desperate to see family. A lot of people haven't been back to their home countries for maybe 2+ years. And, you know, maybe just fancy a bit of adventure as well. So that 200% increase, is this year on year from last year?
Yeah, so it's for travel between June and September. So what you would think, you know, that kind of peak summer period mm-hmm. and versus last year, so the same period last year. So, yeah, it's a very busy summer season. You know, obviously we've got Eid coming up in July as well as school holidays. And yeah, it's been crazy. We've been seeing a lot of people actually booking a bit further in advance than they normally do.
That's interesting. Mm. And is that because we're anticipating prices going up? Is it to do with availability? What can we point to, do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. And I think also, you know, as we were just saying, a lot of people haven't been home or seen family or been on a holiday for mm-hmm. possibly a couple of years. I mean, I haven't been to New Zealand since 2018.
I haven't been back to the UK since 2019, and my mum didn't do a very good job of hiding a disappointment that we're not going back this summer. But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to us going back to the UK, speaking honestly, and I will send this podcast to my mum, is, you know, we're a family of four and we've outgrown my parents' house and my in-laws' house. And if we go back, we're looking at really hefty accommodation prices because a lot of people in the UK are staying there as well. So you've seen this massive boom of staycations and self-catering cottages and caravan parks. So it ends up being cheaper to actually go somewhere, sorry, mum, that I want to go to.
Yeah. It's hard to find that balance, isn't it? Surely you can just ask your mum to meet you somewhere else, though.
Well, that, and in truth, that is a big factor. That we've been really lucky that, you know, both sets of parents are in good health. They've both been over for a month, over the last year. And I have had to promise Christmas as a compromise.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Joining us in the studio is Emily Jenkins from Donata Travel, and you're going to whisk us away on some island adventures. Here's a question, though. Is it too late to book for Eid? You're talking earlier about travel trends and really trying to book as far in advance as possible. Eid, we're looking at probably the 9th of July. Is that what you're hearing-ish? 8th, 9th?
Yes, I believe so. So maybe the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or Saturday to Tuesday.
Tuesday, okay. Mm-hmm. So let's think about, yeah, some island getaways. Where are we going? And how much are we spending?
So we have an very exciting, it's an awesome offer actually, with Etihad Airways to Crete. So Crete is the largest island in Greece. And yeah, it's a beautiful, it's known for its natural beauty, like beautiful beaches, culture, the whole works. So we've got an amazing offer. So it's 4 nights staying at the 4-star Palazzo Vecchio exclusive residence in Rethymno. So this is including breakfast daily and return economy class flights with Etihad. Mm-hmm. And you're looking at just 2,485 dirhams per person.
What?
Yes.
2,485 dirhams, 4 nights, including flights.
To Greece in summertime.
Whoa.
Or Eid.
Okie dokie. Okay, right. Listen, I'm not going to lie. You've started strong here, Emily. Where are we going next? Do you know what? I've got a friend who's currently in Santorini. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you about it in general because she's posting some really good kind of hints and tips and tricks. And she's saying it's like surprisingly small, which is no bad thing. I think it's quite nice to have something to feel accessible. But it is one of those, and I'm firmly putting Instagram at the reason mm-hmm. for this, one of the most popular destinations right now. Is it still possible to get a deal in Santorini?
Yes, it is. So I think, yeah, Santorini probably isn't as big as you think it is, but yeah. It's, you know, very beautiful, those white and blue cliffside buildings, you know, the sunsets, you know, overlooking the sea. We've got a really good offer, again, flying with Etihad Airways to Santorini. We're staying 4 nights at the 4-star SMY Orizzontes Santorini. This is located in the Pergos village, which is the original capital city of Santorini, or village, I should say, and it's like a preserved medieval village, and it's a little bit off the beaten track, but it's got beautiful water views up on a hilltop. Awesome offer there. So 4 nights, including those return economy class flights with Etihad, you're looking at 3,705 dirhams per person.
Do you know what I'm thinking? You know what I'm doing for Eid, don't you?
Climbing a mountain.
Yeah, I'm now thinking, what? Why? Why don't I just go and have a nice little 4-day break somewhere sunny that doesn't require me to have an ice pick and harnesses and crampons and be packing flapjack? I'm going to have to serious thinks about this tonight.
You'll be looking at very different sunsets.
Oh my gosh. Oh, crikey. Okay, you're leading me astray. Let's go to Croatia because, in honesty, this has been one of my all-time favourite family holidays that we've ever, ever had. I meticulously planned it to the point of Excel spreadsheet meltdown, and don't regret it for a minute. We took in loads over the course of about 2 weeks. We stayed in caravans, we stayed in tree houses, hotels, we were all over the place. In fact, I actually always get lots of questions about this. If you want to have a little nosy on my Instagram, I've got a highlight. I think it's called something like Croatia for Kids. So if you look at, it's Helen Farmer on Instagram. All the places we stayed are in there. But you've kind of broken it down into super easy destinations and kind of grouped it to avoid as much travel as we did, Emily. Where's on your hit list?
So, I could also say one of my favourite holidays was also to Croatia. We sailed down the coast and went to all the different islands. I did it without children, so obviously a bit easier.
Different experience where yes. I was like, okay, what's the kids club situation? Oh, they're free scooters. Okay, we're definitely staying there. What I would say about Croatia, some of the best pizza I have ever had in my entire life.
I mean, it's very close to Italy.
I know, and I hadn't quite realised that. My geography is poor until I got there and I was like, oh my gosh, this pizza's insanely good. So we went straight up. We flew, we went straight up to Istria. So we didn't do Dubrovnik at all. So I still feel like I'd really like to go. And I don't even watch Game of Thrones, but it's big with Game of Thrones fans. Tell us a little bit about that ancient city.
So the ancient city of Dubrovnik is amazing. It's located on the Adriatic Sea, and it's one of the most prominent tourist destinations, particularly in Croatia. Some people also fly into Dubrovnik to drive across to Montenegro, but it's not very far, or you can go up out to the islands or back up. It's an old, like it's got a huge wall around the city, so you can climb right around the top of that. I also did party in a nightclub inside the walls of Dubrovnik, which was quite
pre-children.
Amazing. Pre-children. Yeah. but yeah, so it's an amazing thing to do. It's a beautiful city, lots of great places to eat, cultural experiences. So yeah, I think it's an awesome destination to go to. So we've got an offer for 3 nights at the 4-star Hotel Lapad in Dubrovnik with breakfast daily and return economy class flights. That there is 3,930 dirhams per person.
And in terms of time of year to travel, it's just a lovely European summer temperature.
I think we went at the end of May, start of June, and yeah, weather was still lovely. Not too hot, easy to walk around.
And what about, I guess, the capital as well? And also some island options, you know, we found it so easy. We got a ferry over to Split. It was really, really accessible. So Zagreb?
So I love Zagreb. It's for me, it was a real surprise. It's just a really cool capital, lots of history, culture, again, great food. One of the places I went to was they have a really interesting museum called the Museum of Broken Relationships, where people have written in letters and sent in items and told the story about how they got broken up with or dumped by a girlfriend or boyfriend or et cetera. It's really interesting and right in the middle of Zagreb there. So I have to admit I've been there twice.
Well, the Broken Relationship Museum. Yeah. Did you contribute or just consume?
Yeah, well, consume.
No comment.
It's just a great city. And I think the nice thing is too, you could look if you wanted to with Croatia, flying into Dubrovnik and then travelling upwards and flying out of Zagreb to come back again.
So we found the roads incredible. They love a tunnel. I love a tunnel. It was amazing. And as I said, we did a couple of islands. So we went over to Split. We went to Brac, which is absolutely gorgeous. It's got, I think, what's kind of commonly known as like the most beautiful beach in the world. It's this kind of peak of sand. It's just absolutely stunning. So I would really, really recommend a bit of Brac, which is BRAC. Really just incredible. We're going to have to squeeze in a few messages. I've got questions to get to, Emily. As I said, Alexis has been in touch earlier saying, October half term, book now or wait. Never know if booking ahead is actually better for the budget, and fuel prices are adding even more uncertainty. What are you seeing in terms of availability, and what can be more, I guess, effective on the wallet?
So I would always recommend, if you are going to travel in a school holiday or a public holiday period, to get ahead of the game, because if you generally can't shift your date, so you're less flexible, so you need to book within that time, and you've got more people traveling. So I would say, anywhere from 3 to 6 months in advance, you should still be able to get a good deal. We are seeing at the moment with summertime, people needing to be a bit more flexible with when they can travel, because it is such a peak period. The closer we get to it, the harder it is to get availability. So, if it is, those December holidays, October half term, or any kind of public holidays, get ahead of the game.
There you go, Alexis. Go forth and book, and let me know where you're going.
Home or away.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We're talking travel this afternoon. Emily Jenkins is with us from Donata Travel, taking my questions and yours, and indeed offering up some ideas and inspirations on where to go, plus some brilliant deals as well. I had a query from Teresa saying, our son, age 13, is flying to Barcelona unaccompanied, but we're struggling to find out what documentation he needs, obviously apart from his passport. We think he will need some kind of parental certificate, but not sure help.
So the answer to this question will depend on which airline they are flying with, assuming that it is Emirates, you do need to fill out a form for children aged 5 to between 5 and 11. Any children between the age of 12 and 15, you can make a special request for unaccompanied minors service so that they can help. You know, get a hostess to assist. So if you have booked that with an agent, they can put the remarks into your booking. Otherwise, you'll need to contact the airline.
All the very best. How exciting. I love this question from Wasim saying, we're planning a special weekend away for our daughter when she finishes her exams. She'll be 17. We're a pretty adventurous family. I can only get a couple of days off work, so looking at about 4 days. Any thoughts? My mum took me away when I finished my exams. I was 17 as well. And it was one of the most memorable holidays because it felt like it was just me and my mum, and which was really special to have that time. And we have lots of family in Canada, so we went to Toronto for about a week. It was amazing. And I just love the idea of just marking this achievement that, you know, she was finishing those. What comes to mind? So 4 days, and, you know, not super long flights here, Emily.
So what about Malta?
Ooh, tell us more.
So I think Malta is, you know, it's got a lot to do, and it's not huge, so you can cover quite a lot in a few days. So you've obviously got like the vibrant capital, Valletta, lots of small historic cities. So there's the silent city of Medina, and lots of quaint towns, fishing villages, beautiful islands. So lots to explore. So we do have an offer there at the moment for 3 nights, staying at the stunning 5-star Carinthia Palace in Malta. It's located just beside the San Anton Palace and Gardens. So including breakfast daily and economy class flights, you're looking at $4,275 per person.
Cyprus was somewhere else that kind of came to mind as well, because that's a kind of similar distance. But I have to say, I've never actually been. What's the offering like there?
So Cyprus also, you get, you know, you've got beachside cities, you know, mountains. You've got a really
nice... diving as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, okay.
So, yeah, beautiful. And it's only about a 4-hour flight time. So we do have a great offer there for Limassol, which is a lively cosmopolitan city. But you stay there 3 nights, 5-star Park Lane, a luxury collection, resort and spa, with breakfast daily and return economy class flights for 3,725 dirhams per person.
Hope that helps there. And congratulations in advance. I think that's a really lovely thing to do. Let's stay a bit closer to home, Emily. What are some of the deals that are around the UAE right now? Because, wow, we had Michelin being announced. I'm expecting some foodie tourism going on. And Dubai's feeling buzzy. Does that mean that there aren't any deals, or can you help us out?
No, but there's some great staycation offers at the moment, and we usually get really good ones for summer as well. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye on janatatravel.com. We've got a whole page on there all about the best staycation offers we've got at the moment. So a newly opened property in Dubai on the Palm is the 8 on the Palm. This is inspired, I think it's a bit Miami inspired, so, you know, fashion, glamour, art deco scene. Our team was lucky to go and have a site visit of it before it opened, and the pool area, the beach club, are incredible.
Now, so, I'm going to ask a really ignorant question. This is the one that I never know how to pronounce.
Yes.
Because it's spelt a bit strange.
So I say the 8.
But it's spelt T-H and then 8, yeah? Mm. Okay, T-H-8. I'm Googling it right now. Okay, perfect. Ooh, it's very nice. Okay, tell us more. What's happening there?
So we have an office. So you can stay 1 night at the 5-star, the 8 Palm, managed by Accor. We have a 60% saving on your stay. So it's 165 dirhams per person.
What?
Or if you want to include all of your meals, so breakfast, lunch and dinner, you can upgrade from 365 per person.
What?
Yeah.
165 dirhams per person? Crikey, it looks really, really nice. Where on the Palm is it exactly? I'm trying to picture it.
Right down the, like, the end of the crescent, the point of the end.
Am I turning left or right at the top?
I'm going to say left.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Wow, that is mega. Okay, we're going to squeeze in a couple more questions. We've been talking about the Greek islands quite a bit, actually, but there's a question here that really made me smile, because Caroline's saying, looking for any advice or ideas around the best Greek islands to visit with teens. Don't want anywhere too lively. Ideally somewhere they can have a bit of freedom, some fun things to do. It's been hard to judge. The quieter resorts seem to state they're suitable for couples or young families. So yeah, okay, don't do what I did. To this day, I don't know why my mum let me go on holiday when I was 17. I really don't. she'll never know, and she will never, ever find out how badly we behaved on that holiday.
Where did you end up?
Well, first, I was 16. We went to Tenerife on a girl's holiday. 17, we went to, oh my goodness, where did we go? We went to one that, did we go to?
Corfu?
No, we went to Rhodes, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, never again. Never, ever again. Don't do those ones.
So I think, I know we talked about...
Or don't go to certain places on those islands.
So I went to Corfu on holiday, and what I liked about it is you could find quiet spots as well as places to party.
Party places.
Yeah. But I think some of the, you know, like we talked earlier about Crete, it's a big island, but you've also got really beautiful spots there as well, like with Thymno that we were talking about before, is a city on the north coast, and it's got, you know, like a beautiful waterfront and beautiful beaches. You get history and culture. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can find spots like that which aren't just about families or just about couples.
I'm just having some flashback. Let's just say I'm glad it was before social media, Emily. All right.
Yeah.
So are you all sorted for Eid yourself?
Yes, we are off to the Maldives. We're staying at Corumba because, you know, having a baby, it's a short speedboat ride, and we've got a, you know, a room with a pool, beachfront. Very excited. We've got 5 days there.
Oh, proper holiday.
Yes.
I've got a feeling I'm going to get back from climbing this mountain in Georgia and full of regret that I didn't actually
need
just...
Need to come too.
Yeah.
Just pop past.
Just want to go to Crete instead.
Yeah.
A couple of messages going, where can we find these deals? All of this is on donatatravel.com. And as you said, lots happening over the summer as well. Have you decided if you're going to be doing your surprise summer destinations yet? Come on.
Secret stays, you mean?
Yes.
We have been talking about it, but no, there's no confirmation on that just yet.
So good.
I mean, the thing is, the offers we've got, like the one we were just talking about before, to the Eight, for example, and, you know, our favourite one, the Intercon and Ras Al Khaimah, mm-hmm. we've got that all-inclusive offer for two nights at the moment. That's about 915 dirhams. They're such good offers, we don't need to keep them a secret.
That's true, and people know where they're going. So it is donatatravel.com. I can't believe the Eight. That is an incredible deal. Okay, get on it, people. Get on it. Emily, thank you so much. Always appreciate your time.
It was a pleasure.
We'll catch up soon.
You're listening to Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, where the number one ingredient is always high-quality salmon, lamb, turkey and chicken.
Dr. Louisa Coelho from the Cat Vet is in the studio, ready to take your questions. And yeah, look at your photos of your cats wearing sunglasses, because who doesn't want that on a Wednesday afternoon? Dr. Louisa, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Are literally wearing the T-shirt of the Cat Vet, so it is all about feline friends. And I'm so sorry, we're just talking off air about our pets. And you sadly had to say goodbye to yours earlier this year through old age. Can you tell us about them?
Oh, yes. So I lost my two elderly, actually dogs. I'm so sorry. I know the segment is about cats, but...
I have dogs as well. We're allowed to coexist.
So my two elderly dogs, I had to say goodbye to them earlier this year in February. They lived a very happy life. And I am actually happy to say that they were the very best friends with my cats as well.
Interesting.
I've never known dogs who liked cats so much. So I think that... I probably rubbed off on them a little bit.
Well, it's funny because we're dog people through and through. And then we had an incident about a month or so ago of our neighbour going, there's a kitten in our car engine. And I was like, okay. She said, it's running between our garage and your garage. So we end up kind of scooping up little Chip, who was about 6 weeks old. And because we've got dogs, I then spent about a week sitting in the guest loo with him, just like feeding and cleaning and playing. And he thankfully, and I really am so, so grateful, ended up being adopted by a vet, which I think is all anyone could ever wish for.
Perfect solution.
And she's been sending me photos of him playing with their cockapoo.
Yes.
Best of friends. Absolutely best of friends.
It's actually much easier to introduce kittens and cats to dogs than it is to introduce them to other cats, actually.
Interesting, because we often get lots of questions on this saying, we've got one cat, we think this cat might be lonely, should we get them a friend? And the answer is often, probably not.
No. Most likely they will not want a friend.
We have got lots of messages for you, Dr. Louisa, so we're going to get through as many as we can. I got this on Instagram earlier and it made me think. This is from Donna saying, is it true that cats shouldn't drink cow's milk?
Yes, it's true, because they lack the ability to digest lactose. So it's actually not a suitable milk to give them. But we do have commercial cat milk that is sold in supermarkets and that has a lower content in lactose. It's more appropriate for cats.
consuming cow's milk can actually cause diarrhea.
Okay, there you go. Every day's a school day. And Ankit was asking about food, saying, how do I understand how much wet and dry food, or wet versus dry, to feed my cats? Great question.
So ideally, we advise that you feed a combination of both. So dry food actually is quite convenient because you can leave it out throughout the day for the cats to graze on, which is more of a normal feeding behavior for a cat. They would, if they were in the wild, they would have multiple small meals throughout the day. And we cannot leave wet food out, otherwise it will go bad quite quickly.
That was my main issue with having this little rescue kitten. I was like, you are adorable, but your food is
stinky.
Not.
We do want them to eat wet food, though, because it's actually, in terms of nutrient analysis, is much more high in protein, lower in carbohydrates, high in moisture content as well, helps keep them hydrated. And generally, it has a lot less calories per gram. Mm-hmm. So they can actually consume more food and not ingest as many calories as a dry food would provide. So in terms of weight management, it's also more desirable.
Okay.
So usually we recommend that you do have a set amount of dry food left out for them to graze throughout the day, portions, and you feed them separate meals of wet food throughout the day as well. The amounts will vary depending on the weight of the cat, obviously their life stage, their body condition. We calculate that for you. So we basically make an assessment of their body weight, of their muscle scoring, and then we calculate the amount of food that they should be having per day, ideally. And we tend to sort of divide that between wet and dry to mm-hmm. provide you with an optimal sort of plan.
Hope that helps, Ankit. Follow-up question here from Elisa saying, so is lactose-free milk for humans an option for cats because commercial pet milk is pricey? Bit of lateral thinking there. I've got no idea.
To be honest, I have no idea either. Theoretically, it sounds like it could be an option, but I always ask owners to stick to commercially, nutritionally balanced products that are designed for animals, just to avoid any digestive upset.
Because presumably they have got animals in mind in terms of, you say, kind of
exactly.
research and development and making sure it's nutritionally balanced. Good question, though. Do a little bit of digging on that. I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed by the cat people of Dubai this afternoon. We've got so many questions. Message here from Kat about Kat, who is helping to feed and look after a stray colony in Dubai. She's saying lots of kittens have eye infections. Is there anything we can do with eye drops that we could administer them on the street without having to take them to the vet? She said we are trying to trap, neuter and release them as well.
That's a little bit more complicated because most of these kittens are actually infected with cat flu. Cat flu is caused by a multitude of agents. They're viruses, they're bacteria. So the eye disease is a part of the cat flu complex. It may either be caused by a type of bacteria or the viruses. So the treatment will change depending on what exactly is going on. Mm-hmm. Also, we know that sometimes they have these basically eye issues, which are mainly just inflammation, conjunctivitis. Sometimes they can actually have overt infection and pus in their eyes. Sometimes they even have ulcers on the surface of the eye as well. And the medication will vary depending on the severity of the condition and what exactly is going on. And all of these medications are also prescription medications. So without seeing a vet, it's often kind of difficult for us to give a blanket recommendation that would be effective in all cases. But there is things that you can do, and I would advise, well, obviously feeding them a good quality diet if you possibly can. Probiotic supplementation can actually help with their immune system, to strengthen the immune system, and it has been linked with faster recoveries from cat flu in shelters, and it's something that you can get over the counter. So there's a specific one from Purina, which is Fortiflora for cats, so that can help too, not to address the eye
but
obviously specifically,
but
to reinforce
health.
The immune system in general. And also keep the eyes clean as much as possible. You can use some cotton wool, moistened with warm water, or even just sterile saline. And just make sure that you rub all those secretions away as much as possible. And obviously, as soon as possible, get them to the vets, because we'll be able to assess what's going on and prescribe the more appropriate treatment that would be more effective in that particular case.
Now, I did just mention the TNR, the trap, neuter, release, which we always get a lot of messages on. And there is, unfortunately, a lot of dumped cats and kittens around the UAE at the moment. And this is something you guys at the Cat Vet are really committed to helping, and you are doing some special rates for anyone that is bringing in rescued cats. So if that's useful information, please do drop us a line. We'd be happy to connect you with the team there.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan, groundbreaking science, life-changing nutrition.
Feeling a little bit overwhelmed on the text line today. We're very busy in the studio. Dr. Luisa Coelho is here from the Cat Vet, which, as the name suggests, they do specialise in treating our feline friends. Can I ask a bit of a strange question, Luisa? You've worked in non-cat specific vets before, but what do you think the benefits are of having a space that really is dedicated to cats, for the animal and the owner, I suppose, but mostly the animal?
It's overwhelming. Yes, so I've worked for the first 3 years of my career in mixed practice, so dogs and cats. I had a very, very special cat who did not tolerate anyone touching him in any sort of way. And one day, actually, this is what motivated me to change to cat-only practice. One day, when I wasn't a vet yet, after having very traumatic experiences at the vet with him, very difficult situations in which he would poo, pee, become extremely nervous to the point that I was actually considering not seeking veterinary care just because of the stress it would cause him.
I think that's really understandable and way more common than I think a lot of people realize, because
it is,
you're putting you're getting anxious, that cat is picking up on that, and it becomes this cycle of stress and distress.
Exactly, and it's an emotional burden for you. It's very, very very difficult to deal with, because you know your cat is sick, you do want to help him, but then you feel like you're making it worse. Until one day that I actually went to a different vet clinic in which they were actually using appropriate handling techniques, feline-friendly handling techniques. And my cat, who was a self-professed monster up until that point, was an absolute angel. And I actually watched a vet draw blood from my cat without even restraining him while he was very happily eating a treat.
Wow.
So
total 180.
Yes, exactly. And this was due to proper handling and proper sort of management prior to the consultation alone. So there's a lot that we can do in feline-specific clinics that makes a huge difference, both during the vet appointment in their levels of stress and also during their stay in the hospital, and which basically automatically translates into usually a faster recovery and less stress during the hospital stay, which is usually something that compromises them a lot.
Which presumably, not to bring it back to money, but, you know, if you're having less time in care, then it's going to be beneficial for your wallet as well.
Yes, exactly.
So less stress there too. But no, that's so interesting to hear of your own experience. And I know it's been hugely beneficial to patients and cat parents as well.
Yeah.
To the text line, Luisa, because we've got a lot of messages to get through. A message here from Hannah, who sent in a very, very gorgeous photo of Leonardo, saying, is tuna in water okay for cats? Leonardo has dry food, as he doesn't seem to like any of the wet food. Fussy rescue. He has a teaspoon of tuna every evening and turns up at the door at 10 o'clock on the dot. Loves it. Is it good or bad, though?
It's fine as a complementary option to a nutritionally balanced diet. Tuna in water obviously is much less of an issue than tuna in olive oil, for instance, would be. I do try to recommend sort of cat-specific options, and you have actual food brands that look, if you open the tin, they look like tuna in water. And you can use them and they're actually nutritionally balanced. They're complete diets. But if this is his thing, if this is what he loves, tuna in water, unseasoned, is a perfectly suitable option. The water of the tuna is actually, or flavored water in general, is actually something that we sometimes suggest to owners when we need cats to actually maximize their water intake.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have specific conditions, in general, we want them to drink water as much as possible, but cats are not very good at doing that. So if they have specific conditions that require maintenance of hydration, like kidney disease, for instance, we can convince them to drink a little bit more water by offering them tuna juice. So
tuna
the water
juice
from the canned tuna.
Crikey.
Or you can actually boil some white fish without any seasoning and offer them the broth. The same thing with chicken. The chicken broth is also suitable. Just be mindful not to add any fats or any salt or any other seasonings that might harm them.
But that's really interesting, especially as we're getting into the warmer months as well.
Yeah.
What are cats like when it comes to regulating temperatures?
So they're actually quite good at stepping away from extreme sources of heat or cold. You will notice, actually, it's curious that you mentioned that you found the kitten on your engine. This is something that happens a lot in colder countries or in the winter, because they seek the warmth from the engine and they kind of go there in search of shelter. I've also had a friend of mine telling me that his cats during the winter like to go under the covers and sleep next to him.
I bet they do. These cats, yeah. These cats don't know how lucky they
are. And he was actually talking about farm cats, not exactly domestic cats. So they would generally stay away and keep well away from humans. But during the winter months and when it was cold, they would seek body heat. So they're really good at self-regulating. But we do have to take into consideration that if you have particular types of breeds, especially here in Dubai, if you have Persians, if you have breeds that have very narrow nostrils, very squishy faces, they might have a little bit of trouble thermoregulating. They're not good with ventilation. Okay. And so these cats should not be let outside during the hotter hours of the day. They should be kept supervised. They should be kept inside in the AC. And we've had quite a few instances of heat strokes already.
What are some of the signs that, you know, we can be looking out for in heat stroke? Because in dogs, it's much more obvious.
Yes, it's much more obvious. In cats, it might be a little bit more tricky, but they will pant. They will become weak. They will collapse, if that is the case. And they just, cats do pant, actually. If they're in extreme stress, if they're not able to ventilate in an effective way, any other way, you will see them panting. But obviously, it's not advisable to wait until we're at that stage. Prevention is the best option. So during the hotter hours of the day, just please keep them inside, especially if you have breeds like Persians, like British Shorthairs, Scottish Folds, any squishy-faced cats, any cats with tiny nostrils. They're not good at breathing. They're not good at ventilating. So just keep them inside. It's safer for them.
And if you are starting to notice some of those signs, obviously vet is first port of call, but is there anything you can do to help safely lower their temperature in the meantime?
It's tricky. I would recommend, obviously, if you can, bringing them to the vet as soon as possible, because there are specific ways of cooling them that involve fluid therapy, that involve actual careful administration of water. You might stress them if you try to do that at home. If you actually apply, for instance, a wet towel over them, you might actually make it worse, mm-hmm. because we're actually trapping the heat. So we know what to do. The best thing is to bring them to us as soon as possible. Obviously, if your vet clinic is slight, or if your vet clinic of choice is slightly further away from home and you have a closer one next to you, you should, in these situations, in emergency situations, always try to find the nearest possible option. Okay, then obviously we'll cooperate and the history of the patient will be transferred between the clinics. But the main thing is that you can get your pet to the vet safely and get prompt veterinary attention.
Thank you, Louisa.
This is Pets and Vets on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With ProPlan.
Joining us live in the studio this afternoon is Dr. Louisa Coelho from The Cat Vet. She's taking your questions and mine about looking after cats, getting cats, introducing them. And also, we're really enjoying the photos, Louisa. Some great pics coming in. We've had messages of cats wearing sunglasses. We've had Susan sending photos of Soxy and Scampi. And yeah, it's just a treat, to be honest. What do you love about your job? What's the best bit? Louisa.
I think that's one of the best bits.
Meeting
the cats. To be honest, I'm not very fond of people. I do it for the cats. I'm really sorry. This is the honest.
but it's an interesting point about the job, because obviously you're dealing with animals, but there is the side effect of the owners. What has been some of the biggest surprises about being a vet? Because for so many kids, it's on that dream job list. You know,
one of those kids.
my daughter is one of them. She wants to be a dog trainer and an athlete and an artist and a vet. I was like, wow.
Okay,
you know,
so that's a busy schedule.
She's going to be pretty busy. But what was it that drew you to this profession, and how's it been in terms of expectations?
I don't know. I think I was born into it. I just don't remember wanting to be anything else other than a vet. I guess that I didn't envision that I would be working with just cats, but that seems to have been a natural sort of progression of the way there. But yes, since I can remember being a person, this is all I've wanted to be.
So, like a calling. And yeah. You must have, you know, treated hundreds of thousands, I'm sure, animals over the years. Have there been any stories that have really kind of stayed with you? Any patients that you just will never forget?
A lot of them, to be honest, a lot of them. And a lot of people, a lot of clients and patients I still actually keep in contact with. It's impossible to name just a few. Even just being here in Dubai for a short period of time, I've already got some quite heartwarming stories.
I think it's because it's such an emotional thing. You're trusting a member of your family to somebody.
It's rewarding when the cases go well, for sure. And it's really good to keep in contact with people. But you know that the thing with vets, and I think that this is universal across the profession, is that the ones you do not forget are the ones that you lose. And I think that's probably the biggest surprise, or maybe the biggest thing that no one tells you when you start working as a vet, is how much of an emotional toll this is going to take on you. And you have to be mentally resilient to be able to deal with that. So it's a slightly sadder note, but this is...
That's part of it.
An honest honest review of the job.
It's
beautiful,
it.
And we play with kittens all day long, but it's also very, very taxing.
But that shows just how much you care. Which is all you ever want when you're entrusting a furry member of the family over to somebody, and you know, when you stop caring and you stop being upset, then you know maybe that's a sign of something as well. Yeah. Right, Louisa, we've got lots of messages to get through.
Okay,
a message here saying, with rescued cats, what should be done first when it comes to their health?
Get them to the vets. We need to check them over.
And what are you looking for?
We're going to do a physical examination. With rescue cats, it's very common that they will have infectious diseases. Here in Dubai, we actually get a whole package usually, which is ear mites, ringworm, cat flu. They all seem to just come with the full package. So we do check them thoroughly for signs of any of these diseases. We treat them appropriately. In terms of preventative care, it's not advisable to proceed with vaccinations or anything like that in the first day that we see them. We always want them to stay with the fosters or to be closely monitored for at least a week before going ahead with such procedures, because we need to make sure that they're not incubating anything. If they're not sick when we first see them, chances are they're going to get sick at some point. So we kind of need to wait, give them a few days. We cannot be distracting their immune systems with more things that might actually make it worse. We can deworm them. So usually parasites are usually a big thing as well in street cats. That's safe to do usually when we see them. During the first appointment, we want to check their hydration status. We want to check them for external parasites as well, for any injuries, any teeth issues. So yeah, we basically give them a full MOT, as it were.
Fatima's saying, on Monday, my cat was congested from a cold. He was eating fine until today. He begs for food and does his usual following around waiting for it. When we give it to him, he can't smell it from being stuffed up, so he won't eat it. He is drinking water. Any idea how we can help him?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. Well, ideally, I would say, if you can, take him to the vets. In the meantime, there are things that we can do to try and relieve the symptoms. Just think about him as a human with flu. So you also, when you have a blocked nose, you cannot smell your food. It's not as appealing to you. You may have a sore throat. It might be difficult for you to swallow. So you want to give him actually sort of processed or slightly liquidy food. Try or favor wet food. Try to blend it if you only have sort of the pieces in gravy. Warming it up slightly in the microwave might help release the scent and make it more appealing for your cat. If he's truly very congested and you have, for example, one of those pediatric nebulizers, you know, the ones that you use for children.
Yeah,
you can use that with either water or saline. Place your cat inside the carrier, cover it with a towel, and put the nebulizer in there, steam him
little
up.
Little steam room situation.
Because if there's snot, if there's buildup of discharge in its nose, it will help actually make it a little bit more fluid and it will help him expel that. But that being said, do not leave your cat without eating for more than 2 days. The consequences of that can be dire. So take him to the vet as soon as possible. He might need antibiotics. He might need more specialized treatment. Also, another tip to try and fluidify those secretions in the nose is to, if you're taking a very steamy shower, take him into the bathroom with you. That might help. You can try and syringe some saline into those nostrils to see if we can help release some of the buildup of the discharge. So stuff like this, it's safe to do. But if he's not eating, that's one of the primary concerns. So get him to the vets and get him checked as soon as possible.
Dr. Louisa, we've run out of time. We haven't run out of questions, though. The cat community of Dubai has been out in force this afternoon. It's been lovely to hear. hear from you and see the photos as well. But if people do want to come and see you one-on-one, bring their animal to you, you can be found there at the Cat Vet. It's on Hesser Street. Wonderful to meet you. Great to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you again to all of you for getting in touch. I've been truly spoiled by the photos. That's been my favourite part of this afternoon.
I told you.
Yeah, Simba in the sunglasses. Absolutely fantastic. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.